Welcome back to the Sports Talk ATL podcast. I'm Chase Earl, joined by Alex Lord and Jake Gordon. Guys, we finally got a piece of Braves news. They made a significant move acquiring Sean Murphy from the Athletics. It's not the move that I expected. I actually said several times, hey, despite rumors, I don't believe this is something they're going to do for several reasons. But give me your initial starts. Jake, let's start. Initial thoughts. Jake, let's start with you on what you think about this first big move. And it's a big move. I mean, when you look at the Matt Olson trade, what we gave up for Olson compared to Murphy, there's a lot more for Murphy.
Yeah, and you talk about Sean Murphy. I was telling people, this is JT Realmuto Lite, so you better get prepared to pay for JT Realmuto Lite. And it was a big package. It was a big return. A lot of people think the Braves really got robbed on this one. And I think a lot of that comes from, I texted this to y'all, I think they kind of got fleeced by association because I don't know what the A's were doing. They didn't get the second best player in the trade. They may have not have even got the third best player in the trade. They probably did with Kyle Muller. But I just don't understand why Milwaukee was the middleman there. Did they just want more prospects? Maybe they just really liked Estuary Ruiz. I think the Braves could have made up that difference. They really seem to mess this one up. I think they really went quantity over quality. I know they have Tyler Soderstrom. I know they have Shea Langeliers, but they could have found a spot for William Contreras. But whatever. That's not my team. I really don't care. They got a fourth outfielder who can't hit, and then whatever we would have given him anyways instead of Contreras. But I don't think the Braves really – I don't think it was too bad of a trade. I think Sean Murphy's defense is really underrated, and a lot of people pointed his batting average, which is already stupid. But away from Oakland, he was probably one of the best hitting catchers in the entire league. He's up there with Darno and Realmuto and guys like that. And he's got power. And you talk about Matt Olson this year, no shift. We saw him hit into the shift a lot. I think him and Olson is going to bring a lot to this lineup. I don't think it was a bad trade. I think it was a little strange, I guess. You know, a catcher wasn't really what we expected, but I definitely think he's an upgrade. I love William Contreras. I'm very sad to see him gone, but it was definitely an upgrade. He's a good player.
I don't think the Braves got shafted as far as what they gave up for Sean Murphy. Like you said, I think the Brewers come out of this like highway bandits. I don't know how they end up with William Contreras for the fifth best outfield prospect in their system. I don't know how the Braves couldn't have made that up. I mean, if they are in love with the outfield prospect, why don't you give him Malloy and you know, keep him for this trade and not give up Contreras? I think my thing about why I don't necessarily love the deal is because, sure, there's an upgrade over. Like, if you put Sean Murphy and William Contreras right next to each other, Sean Murphy's a significantly better player. But the facts are Murphy and Darnold make their money, make their war primarily off defense, not over being a DH. Like, if you – they're not, like, a good DH. Like, they don't hit that good. They're sub-800 OPS guys. I would say William Contreras is a much better DH than both of those players. So defensively, yeah, but you can only have one of those guys on the field at the same time. And I don't love either of them as a DH. I think you could go get Josh Bell or do something like that. Like, those guys are way better hitters if you're just going to use them as DH. Their value is brought by being on the field and catching and stuff. So, yeah, it's nice getting 162 games of those guys, but I just don't know if the upgrade was worth it when you consider how many prospects we gave up and how little we have left. And we still have two glaring holes in shortstop and left field. So I'll wait to see how the rest of the offseason shakes out. But, you know, if you're going in with Vaughn Grissom at shortstop and you're not really upgrading at left field and that you got a minor upgrade at catcher, I don't love that.
Well, you also have to consider the regular season doesn't start tomorrow. That's the good news. And also, we've been told all offseason we're going to be spending money. So let's see.
Yeah. I mean,
that's what I've been told.
Yeah. If we go out and sign Dansby Swanson or, you know, whatever, like fill in these holes much better. Okay. You know, this is a great upgrade. It's a good upgrade, but I'm not like sold on it if you don't go get Dansby Swanson. And from what we've heard, Dansby seems like kind of a long shot now. Now, of course, the Braves keep things close to the vest. These are just rumors, but it definitely doesn't feel like we're re-signing Dansby Swanson at this point.
Yeah, back on the Sean Murphy train, I wanted to piggyback off of something Jake said. Just to dig into the numbers, there last year he had a 100-point difference in OPS home and away. And I know that we said all of these things about Matt Olson leaving the Coliseum and coming to a hitter-friendly park in Truist, and it didn't quite pan out that way. But I'm saying the same thing with Sean Murphy, piggybacking off of what Jake said, that it should be a noticeable difference in his offensive numbers switching teams.
And Matt Olson, we got to put that in perspective too. Matt Olson still had an 800 OPS, 34 home runs, 103 RBIs, 30 plus doubles. Like he wasn't some slacker out there. Like he had no, some.
He wasn't
slumps,
bad. He, I think he, everyone just thought, hey, he might be able to hit 50, and he hit 34.
And I think he's going
to
be a lot better.
But I still think he could hit 50.
He hit the shift so much. That batting average is going to skyrocket.
I still think he could easily hit 50. And I do think the shift will help him out. And I think there's a lot of reasons why Matt Olson didn't succeed as much as we all wanted him to. And he had that huge slump in the middle of the season. You take that out, he was actually pretty solid. I just like fucking shitting on Matt Olson. We all know this. Sean Murphy, though, he did have his best offensive year, too, by a good bit last year. I mean, 18 homers, hit 250. I think the year before he hit 216. But listen, like I said, it's the defense. And maybe with the pitch clock, the pickoff rules, all this stuff changing, maybe the Braves just felt like all of a sudden there's going to be a huge emphasis. And catcher's already probably the most important defensive position on the diamond. And controlling a pitching staff and stuff like that. We have a young staff. So that's already super important. But I think they might think that there's going to be even more emphasis on the position looking ahead with a pitch clock and with, new pickoff rules and stuff like that. So that's definitely something to take into consideration.
Yeah, Anthopoulos mentioned, looking to the future. And I know Contreras was under contract for, five more seasons? But like you said, he is terrible behind the plate defensively, and Sean Murphy is the exact opposite. And Murphy's under contract for 3 more seasons. Darno's last year under contract is next season. Assuming we extend Murphy, he's the catcher of the future, catching 110-plus games every single year. So, it makes sense on that front.
Yeah. And then you got to wonder, what the future looks like for Darno, because that was a guy, once you trade Contreras and Langeliers, there's no catching depth in this system. There's really no depth in anything. Like, pretty much everything, all the holes that we have the rest of – for the next 5-plus years, are going to be filled by free agents or trades. And we can't.
That's really why I'm doing five minor league free agents at each position. Check that out on the website.
Yeah. So look out for that. But I honestly think Darno's still a candidate for extension too. But obviously if we get an extension done with Sean Murphy and he's now the catcher of the future for the next 7-8 years, let's say they buy out his arb years and extend him for 3 or 4 more years. Okay. I'm going to be much happier about this trade than I was an hour ago or I am right now. But we'll have to wait and see on that, because that's going to be tough to do. He's still got 3 years left. He should be in no rush to be inking these extensions. But hey, they do it all the time. So who knows?
Yeah. There's plenty of people who shouldn't have signed extensions on this team but did.
Let's talk about another candidate for extension. And this is a rumor that came up this morning. And I actually talked about it when I saw Rodon was going to get $200 million or is looking for north of $200 million. Because Rodon is going to be, I think, 30 this year. And that's going to be what Max Fried is going to be when he's a free agent. And you look at the numbers, they're very similar. Max Fried's even been better for longer. Finished second in the NL Cy Young. The Braves could be looking at, exploring trade possibilities with Fried. This is something that I kind of expected. You look at teams like the Rays. I know we have a lot more money in the Rays and stuff, but this is things that they do all the time. They flip their pitchers right before and they replenish their farm system. And next thing you know, they have a fantastic pitching staff. But what are your initial reactions to that rumor from Jim Callis that the Braves could explore moving free?
You talked about it earlier. When they handed Spencer Strider that extension, the writing was on the wall for Fried. We're getting Strider, who is the future ace of this rotation, at a very reasonable price point compared to what other starting pitchers are going to get. Fried is obviously not going to agree to a contract extension in that range. It would be something closer to what the top guys are already getting. And the Braves just aren't going to play ball like that. All of their pitchers besides Charlie Morton are cheap as hell, considering. I don't think this is crazy. I wouldn't even think it's crazy if the Braves just have him ride out his contract and just don't do anything with him, because this is a championship window that only lasts so long. You don't trade away pitchers like that. And I get the Rays point, to replenish the farm system and whatnot. But Fried is such a pivotal piece of this team. And, we're in win now mode. Every single year we're trying to win. Even if in 2024 he's got 1 year left and we're trying to milk him for all we can, I still think we keep him. I think that Anthopoulos, if these rumors are true. Anthopoulos is just, you know, throwing a fishing line out there and just seeing maybe, hell, we could get a king's ransom. I doubt it, but maybe. And that would be the only case. Definitely not this year, though.
Yeah, it's just not the time for that. It's not a this offseason type thing.
That's pretty much exactly what I believe. To be honest with you, I'm right there with you. Not only I would be fucking pissed. I mean, unless we traded him for like two top prospects in all of baseball that like are going to be the next Acuna or something, you know, and they got a good feeling on these guys, I'd be fucking furious because, listen, it's a win now.
We'd still be mad. It doesn't matter who it is.
But you just gutted your damn farm system for Matt Olson and Sean Murphy. Now you're going to try to replenish it by trading away your best pitcher on your roster. That just makes no fucking sense to me. And listen, I'd probably be upset if they trade him next year. Cause like you said, we're in win now mode. Like this roster is ready to win championships. You've just gutted your entire farm system for these next 5, 6, 7 years. And that's fine with me. That's what they should be. We just won a World Series, you know, 1 year ago. But get the most out of Max Fried. Like I want him next year. Like you got two runs. The same reason you go out there and trade for a guy with 2 years that you know you're not going to extend is the same reason why you hold on to Max Fried. You know, you go and trade for these guys because you're like, oh, we can win a championship now, knowing that you're not going to extend half these guys. It happens all the time. You know, you see teams left and right. I mean, the Astros and Garrett Cole, stuff like that. Like, this shit happens all the time. You know what you got. I see no reason why the Braves wouldn't just ride it out with Fried, Strider, Kyle Wright, and those guys and try to win championships with the lineup they have.
If you get one more championship with Fried and he leaves in free agency, I don't think you can really call that a huge failure.
No, it's not a failure at all. Yeah.
Nobody would care.
It's already not a failure. I mean, yeah. Grandmother for one ring.
Right. Yeah. Nobody is.
I mean, that was us literally a year ago. Now we're like pissed that we're not winning every year. But, you know, that's just the way it works. But go ahead, Alex.
Winning organizations don't, you know, sell these kind of players like this in a championship window. That's what losers do. Losers do that.
Who else would you even fucking trade him for? Like, because you're not going to trade him in the National League if you're trying to compete for a championship. There's no way. Like, you have to trade him to the American League. Like, who the hell would, like, I mean, it would just have to be something where I was, like, just blown away.
But the point, it doesn't even matter about position players because like,
the Braves have to get a starting shortstop in return and a starting left fielder.
Two-thirds of their position players locked up for the next 5+ years. So it wouldn't even matter what kind of prospects they'd get because those guys, by the time they got to the majors, you know, Austin Riley's locked up for 10 years. Matt Olson, 8 years. You know, we don't have
holes. Ryder, Michael Harris, 10 years, 8 years.
Yeah.
These guys are here forever. So, yeah, I understand the exploration. I mean, dude, we just traded for Sean Murphy. Like, clearly Alex Anthopoulos will explore anything under the sea. Like, he's going to leave no stone unturned. So, yeah, maybe he'll try to fleece a team that is desperate for a guy like Max Fried. But unless it's just an absolute robbery, I just think – I don't even know why you bring this up if you're a guy like Jim Callis. I mean, I don't know. I guess if you hear rumors and you think you have sources, you might as well mention them. But – to me, it's just so far-fetched and out of the realm of possibility for what the Braves are trying to do, considering they just gutted their whole farm system for two players. Why are we going to trade away our best pitcher? It just makes no sense.
I wonder if these guys feel some type of way about these rumors and if they would be less inclined to share them if they were, say, with another organization where a GM is more outspoken. Anthopoulos plays everything close to the vest, like we said. He's not going to come out here and denounce whatever this insider said. I wonder if, you know, these talking heads are more inclined to share these shaky rumors at best if it's, you know, on a club for the Braves who aren't going to come out and be like, no, that's not true.
I don't know. I just think they don't really give a shit. It just gets them clicks no matter what, which like whatever. It's the same reason why we're talking about it and writing about it because like we all don't believe it. But hey, I mean, I didn't believe the Sean Murphy shit either. And now we have Sean Murphy. So, you know, sometimes these guys do know what they're talking about. That how about that trade, by the way, just the way that it came out? Just like piece by piece. Usually the Braves have like announced everything before everything. And this was like got leaked one piece by one piece. It was, I think you called it a death by 1,000 cuts, Jake. It was exactly like that. I was like, dude, Jesus, just tell me who the hell is going where. I'm like, please tell me we're getting Adamas. Please tell us we're getting something. Turned out just being Murphy. But like you said, and this can be the last that we mention, the Murphy trade is like, I don't think the Braves got fleeced at all. Like, if you look at the value that they gave up, you also got rid of Manny Pena's contract. Like, they didn't get fleeced. the only people that got fleeced is Oakland, and I have no idea what Oakland's doing. But who ever knows what?
I don't think they have any idea what they're doing.
I was just shocked that they didn't even come away with William Contreras in that deal. But absolutely insanity, guys. All right, the next big story in Atlanta sports, and this thing just keeps growing bigger because of what happened with Marcus Mariota. Marcus Mariota has been benched in favor of Desmond Ridder. And now it looks like he's just crying and going home and saying, I'm done for the season. He now has a phantom injury, chronic knee injury. Alex, you can talk more about this. But it definitely looks as if Mariota is just saying, fuck it. Like, I got benched. Now I'm not going to play anymore. And if that's the case, I don't see any way that he plays in the NFL again.
I don't either.
Like, his only value was being like a good locker room veteran guy. And now, you know, teams aren't going to want that, apparently. So I've pieced together multiple reports. Josh Kendall did a piece and basically said that on Thursday morning, Arthur Smith had let Mariota know of the quarterback change. Friday came, and the team was now informed that Mariota would be taking time away from the team. This is where the chronic knee injury comes up. But then Arthur Smith, in said press conference about the same thing, basically, you know, slights Mariota's injury and being like, well, it didn't really affect anything in the season. So, you know, that's his prerogative, Mariota's prerogative. Basically, Arthur Smith is, you know, one of one in terms of backing up his players to a T. You know, he defended Calvin Ridley time and time and time again, all of his players. And that's commendable. This was the first time I really ever saw him kind of throw one of his own players under the bus, so to speak. And it's a pretty damning indictment of Mariota because you were brought in to be the leader. You knew this was not your team. And if you did, you're delusional. He could be a good guy by all accounts, but you got to have some semblance of self-awareness because you weren't the guy. We weren't winning games. The rookie was there. You were always going to be benched at some point. So I don't know what his, you know, idea was when he came to Atlanta, what he was going to be. And, you know, he could have a personal thing going on. Who knows? So I don't want to make sweeping judgments and say he's just a total bum and all that stuff because that's not right. And he could be dealing with something. But surface level, from what Arthur Smith said in the press conference, Josh Kendall of The Athletic, what he reported, it looks pretty bad for Mariota. And I don't see how he plays in the NFL again, especially after this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what Mariota was ever expecting. This was always kind of the plan, especially when you got out of contention. I know the Falcons aren't really out of contention, but when you turn the ball over and you make decisions like a rookie, you're eventually going to get replaced by the rookie, whether you're the veteran or not, because you're playing without a sense to, you know, one of the only thing we ask him to do is like hold on the ball and make veteran decisions. You know, he wasn't doing any of that shit. And we gave you 13 weeks. It's not like we gave you 12, 11, 10. We gave you basically a full season. And now it's, you know, it's a performance-based decision, as Arthur Smith said. And I'm happy about the way that he's handled it, giving Ridder the reins and just saying, hey, this is your team for the rest of the year. It's well past time. But this whole, the situation with Mariota, it's kind of sucks because, I mean, I don't really care. It's not like I have any, like, attachment to Mariota. It's just kind of sad to see a guy just walk away and quit a team, because if there's one thing that kind of has been true throughout this whole season is the players and the coaches have had Mariota's back. So for the, so when they finally do replace him, you go and like quit. It's just like, it's definitely not a good look, especially for as much as, I mean, even after the Steelers game, the players were talking about how Mariota's their guy. They love him, blah, blah, blah. So to just quit on those guys that are, have been sitting there standing up for you to the media when they have no business doing it, they could have easily been like, screw this, Mariota. Like, he's terrible. He's holding us back. They could have done all that. They didn't. They stood up for you. And then you get replaced, and now you're going to quit on the entire team. I mean, that's not just a terrible look. That's embarrassing.
It's a slap in the face. And you got to think about it from the Falcons' perspective, too. Right now, they're slated to pick 10th in the draft. You got to figure out what you have with Desmond Ridder. Like, these last couple games are going to be huge. You're throwing him in a game in New Orleans. Like, this is where Falcons quarterbacks cut their teeth. So I can't say I blame him. And, you know, I do think it's just an insult. It's got to be a big insult to all of his fanboys on Twitter, too, that defend him like he's their father. So
no doubt. I was about to address that. I had a tweet. I just quoted Josh Kendall's article. That's all I did. And it was immediate. There, all of my comments are 50-50, you know, Falcons fans who are like, good riddance. And then Mariota stands who are like, good, you know, you got your fan base is trash, blah, 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 blah. Let me just say this. If it was injury, like it was an actual injury, he could stand on the sidelines for 4 weeks and, you know, heal up on the sidelines. If it was injury related, he's not doing that.
Yeah.
That's all.
I mean, a chronic knee injury that has
allowed hang on. His wife had a baby. And so that is the only reason why I said, you know, something personal could be going on. So I don't want to jump all the way to conclusions, but like from everything that we're seeing and reading, and it doesn't look good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I hopefully something like that doesn't come out, but it definitely doesn't look good. It's probably the last we've seen of Mariota, no matter what, which for cap purposes, I think they can still have like $12 million without him on the roster. So I think that's, you know, an obvious decision. They'll be at like, you know, close to $90 million next year to spend next offseason. So that's interesting. But let's talk a little bit about this matchup versus the Saints. I mean, listen, if there's one team I want to beat, I don't give a shit if we're 4-9 or 3-8, or I don't give a shit what our record is. It's the Saints. It's a dirty, smelly place in New Orleans. I hate it. I hate going down there every time. And I went to LSU, so I know from experience how dirty and smelly that place is. Their fans suck. They're annoying. But I would love to go in there and ruin their season, because this would officially ruin their season if we could go in there and win. I mean, they'd pretty much be mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. And, hey, we got a chance. Like it's crazy, but the Bucks are terrible.
We need a borderline miracle.
The NFC.
We don't even need a miracle, though. The Bucks are actually awful.
I think, like, they play the Lions this week too.
The Bucks could lose every game. They play like the Bengals, dude. The Bucks.
Yeah, I think they play the Bengals. The Panthers. The Panthers
are the team that worry me the most.
The Panthers hold the tiebreaker over the entire division.
I know. They're the team that worries me the most. Like, I think they are like the most likely to come out of the division. Real talk. They're playing harder. I don't know what their schedule looks like to end the year, but
every team in the NFC East should make it over any team in the NFC South. But that's just not how it goes. So.
But aren't they all four make it right now?
They might. I think the Lions are creeping up in there. But I mean, like the Cowboys, the Eagles, the Commanders, like, they're going to be there.
I mean, and we should have beaten the Commanders. So I don't want to hear this bullshit. But anyways, I would love to play one of them. I mean, imagine getting like the Cowboys in the first round.
That would be hilarious.
And they have to play. They have to play.
And they have to come to Atlanta. Like, there would definitely be more like Cowboy fans.
It would literally be a home game.
No doubt.
I kind of want to know what a playoff, like 2022 playoff game would look like in the bins. Like, would people actually be like, fuck it, we're in the playoffs, let's go cheer for them, like one time the whole season?
I think so.
I mean, I would be there. Fuck yeah, I would be there. That would be hilarious. It would be absolutely hilarious.
It's such a shame one of these teams is going to host a playoff game.
No, it's not a shame because I traveled to New York one time when the fucking like 8-8 Giants went on a run. We had to play in New York. We scored two fucking points and we were 11-5. No, I don't have any remorse. We've been doing this my whole life, going and playing shitty teams on the road. The Cardinals, when they went to the Super Bowl, 9-7. We were like 11-5. Had to go to Arizona. Lost by like a field goal. I don't want to hear it. I feel no remorse. This is our time as the NFC South to get lucky and play a shitty playoff game with Desmond Ridder. Like, dude, Desmond Ridder, like, come on. That would be sick. Hosting a playoff game with Ridder after he goes like 3-1 over the last few games. I'm talking myself into it. I think we got this.
Listen, the division is certainly up for grabs this year. And next year, Tom Brady's gone. The Bucs are a dumpster fire. Dennis Allen is a two-time loser now. The Panthers, maybe they hire a rock star head coach.
Is this not crazy that
we're the most like stable and like secure franchise going forward financially and like leadership?
The Saints are so bad off. So bad off.
Well, it's crazy.
In every facet of the wet, every facet of the like. Their coaching sucks. Their salary cap issue is a mess. They don't have a quarterback. They don't have anything. They're overpaying old guys. Yeah.
Dude, if we get a quarterback, like, we will literally win the NFC South for like the next 10 years.
No doubt.
Like, it's
right there for the taking.
This is our division, and it starts this week against the smelly ass Saints. It starts this week. We're going to dominate these guys. in the Superdome, just like we did last year. Cordell Patterson out down the sidelines, touchdown, 80 yards, Matt Ryan, GOAT. We're going to do it again.
We should have beaten them in the season opener, no doubt. And
we're a better team.
I think we're a better team than we are right now than we are.
And I can't wait for Ritter to sling it and just start throwing touchdown passes.
Listen, like, we're going deep. No film on the rookie. There's no film on the rookie.
Unless Dennis Allen been cheating. Got some practice.
You know he has. You know they have.
They probably need it. All right, well, hey, we'll be back next week. We'll be back next week to actually break down what we see from Ritter. It's hard to really say what to expect now because we haven't seen him for 13 weeks. But we'll be back next week to break this down. Thank you guys for listening.